It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. You know, there's something magic about hearing the music and hearing the dulcet tones of John Fox's announce. It's no matter how tired I am, or headachy, or miserable, or deliriously happy, things always get a little bit better when the music starts. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. It is the 19th day of September 2017. It is Titanic Tuesday. It's a birthday. It's a birthday day for longtime dear friends of the program, David the Angry Architect in Australia, and our very own dear buddy Larry in the Bay Area. Happy birthday to you both this 19th day of September. If you'd like to be part of the madcap, merry, zany, wacky, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, I encourage you to wander on by. Just click chat room there at headonradionetwork.com and pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and my goodness, you will be met by a host of wonderful, fun-loving participants this evening. Including, but not limited to, Anatole and Earther and Hoghead and Jug of Punch and Kid Mark and Silent R. Lamar and Mr. Bill and V.T. Blom, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to the pleasant, no longer infernal confines of the man cave, as well as midweek utility pinch-hit all-around great guy moderator Steve from Georgistan. Let's see, I did the high above, yeah. Of course, one of the first thing we do at the beginning of every program is thank the sponsors of the program. No, I'm not talking about charismatic carrots. Have you heard about charismatic carrots? Probably not, because they're new from Horn Labs. Charismatic carrots, a nutritional supplement that packs a carrot-like wallop. Yes, indeed, charismatic carrots will give you all the goodness of several days of binging on carrots. You remember what Bugs Bunny sang? Oh, carrots are divine. You get a dozen for a dime. It's magic. Yes, you'll get a heaping wagon loads nutritional value of carrots with charismatic carrots from Horn Labs. Just a few little capsules every day, and you'll be carrot. You'll be a 24-carat human being. Yes, yes, indeed you will. You know, I can't stand carrots to this day. I've never been able to eat carrots. But thanks to charismatic carrots from Horn Labs, I can now have all the nutritional benefit of consuming carrots. Yes, indeed. Horn Labs, bringing you a brand new product. Charismatic carrots. Yes, for only $29.95, you can have a month's supply of charismatic carrots, and for only $60, that's right, only 10 cents more, a two-month supply of charismatic carrots from Horn Labs, which, of course, don't exist. Neither the Charismatic Carrots nor Horn Labs. No, we exist here on listener contributions. And I'm happy to say that that our subscribers, you know, we're trying to get up to, you know, 400 of them. We're not there by a long shot yet, but our subscribers we sort of launched a zero during the program last night, but our kind and dedicated subscribers who every month step in there to make sure that there's something even on the goose egg nights. Well, they knocked down Monday. They finished off what happened over the weekend. They knocked down Monday and took a little bite out of tonight. So thanks go out to Kenda. Thank you, Kenda, in Missouri. And thank you very kindly to our buddy Tosh. Thank you, Tosh. And thank you very much to Joseph in Ohio. Thank you, Joseph. And thank you very kindly to Robert in Iowa. And thanks as well go out to David in Ohio as well. You know, we need to do a map showing everywhere that the Horn has subscribers around the United States. I mean, I don't think we've got one in Maine. We do in Massachusetts. I think we do in Vermont. I'm not sure about New Hampshire. But anyway, we just put little dots here and there. Rhode Island, we got Rhode Island, yes. New York, we got a subscriber, and we got subscribers in New York. Of course, California, Oregon, Washington. But there are, and you know, you heard Iowa and Missouri. But we've got empty spaces. For instance, we don't have a subscriber in Mississippi. And but anyway, we should probably put up a map. I'll add that to the list. And of course, we are streaming merrily along. Just as a general reminder, streaming merrily along both at WhiteRoseSociety.org and at HeadOn.live. Both streams rolling. And in fact, Brother Deacon Asa boosted the bitrate over at HeadOn.live, and that may provide a little bit more clarity or broadcast goodness. Okay. And thanks very kindly earlier this afternoon to Sandra. Thank you, Sandra, for jumping in. So here's the bottom line. We got $100 to raise tonight. 10 at 10, 1 at 100, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 8 at 12.50, 16 at 6 and a quarter, 32 at $3.13, and, you know, because we're rounding up that half a penny to put into the Horn Maybach Oil Change Fund. Yes. So if you want to help out, just go over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click on Contribute. If you'd like to become one of those subscribers, I'm getting out bumper stickers every week, then click the little box, put the number in. You know, we're looking for 400 at 10, $10 a piece for, you know, you get the idea. And set it and forget it. If you'd rather have it come out at the first of the month and that makes it easier for you, then maybe go over to patreon.com and sign up at for the Patreon campaign. Patreon, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. Okay, and that will that'll make you part of that campaign. So, you know, the options are all there, and trying to come up with new and different swag and ways of expressing gratitude, you know, beyond the fact that we try to thank everybody every evening, because it sure beats the dickens out of having to listen to ads for real fake nutritional supplements, doesn't it? Yes. And I've got one more thank you to put out, because I saw a new, yes, thank you, Barb. I saw new subscribers come in via Patreon. Thank you to Barb, and thank you to Kimberly. Thank you, both of you, very, very kindly for jumping in on the Patreon campaign. You know, we're actually knocking this thing down. I think we're down below 300. I think we're down below 330 now in terms of the number of subscribers that we'd need for me to be able to stop talking about subscriptions and fundraising all the damn time. Steve in New York wants to know, will charismatic carrots cure my glaucoma? No, that's magnificent marijuana, Steve. The wrong supplement. Only magnificent marijuana actually works. Brother Deacon Asa asking, do charismatic carrots help your help you with a boner, Bob? Well, absolutely. Absolutely, because it's a matter of it's a matter of what you believe in. Really it is. It's a matter of what you're willing to put your faith in. So that's enough of that foolishness. Hopefully that'll be the end of the mentioning of this sort of thing for the remainder of the program. Now, what have we got? Well, I mentioned that I felt a little flat, a little kind of just... and it's true. Somehow or another, it's just been a strange day. Probably the biggest part of which has to do with the fact that I had to sit there for 40 long minutes and watch the United States of America be publicly humiliated by its barely literate, not particularly mentally healthy occupant of the presidency at the United Nations today. And I mean, that really will. That'll put you right off a din-din. It certainly ruined my morning and my lunch yogurt. Although, I can tell you that over the time, I've developed some favorites. I like the, the Oikos banana cream yogurt. That's very tasty. And Horizon organic blended yogurt is really, really tasty as well. And you know what? The organic no RGBH stuff, it was the same price as the ordinary yogurt. And you actually got a fraction more of an ounce per container. So yay that. Just no banana cream. I do like the banana cream. So there's an unpaid product placement. So we'll probably talk a little bit, hell, we'll probably talk a lot, about Dolt 45's meandering, bizarre, humiliating, and occasionally terrifying speech at the UN today. I don't recall an American president in the history of the United Nations going back to 1948. I don't recall an American president ever threatening genocide before. But it was there. He promised to totally destroy North Korea. Mm-hmm. And in his speech, he actually called the dictatorial, tyrannical, autocratic ruler of North Korea, who has a sufficient nuclear arsenal to ruin our ally, South Korea, he called him Rocket Man. And, of course, he called terrorists in the Middle East losers. You losers, loser terrorists. And promised that the United States military would deal summarily with the loser terrorists. So, all in all, it was a less than pleasant morning here at the Horn Mansion. And in point of fact, later on when I read the article, I felt like a little bit of a chump. Because I sat and watched the damn thing. You probably did too. You know who didn't? Xi Jinping of China took a pass on the speech. So too, oddly enough, did Big Bad Vladdy Daddy. As well as Theresa May and Angela Merkel. And even Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela, who got his whose country got slimed in Trump's speech. It did too. He took it. He took a powder on attending the speech. Oh, but there was Bibi Netanyahu. Absolutely. You know, birds of a feather flock together, even when they're, you know, well, maybe especially when they're murderous maniacs. Yeah. And he was smiling. He was so proud. You know who wasn't smiling? John Kelly wasn't smiling. I saw that later in the day. That was one of those moments. Sitting there in the audience, listening to his boss deliver an address to the UN General Assembly and basically submitting the United States to an almost unbearable level of shame and humiliation, it looked like it was almost too much for that old Marine. There's a series of photographs out there on the internet, and you can find it if you go and look, of John Kelly, White House Chief of Staff and grizzled old Marine general, in various positions of having, for instance, his head cradled in his hands. And leaning over like he's getting ready to puke on his own shoes. Mm-hmm. It's kind of telling. And of course, right down front, in front of him, is Melanoma, who apparently cannot move her face. You know, by now everybody knows that one of my favorite comedies is the, 1978, 1979, The In-Laws, Peter Falk and Alan Arkin. There's a scene after Peter Falk has caused Dr. Alan Arkin's dentist character to be absent from his office while he was in the midst of procedures. He comes back and he's got the impression thingy in Mrs. Edelman's mouth. And he's screaming at Peter Falk, and he says, "Mrs. Edelman cannot open her mouth!" Because she's getting impressions done for dentures. And I thought of that when I saw the picture of Melanoma today. Because there were several of them. In Siri. And her face doesn't move. It's the damnedest thing. It's like it's carved out of, you know, or cast out of some weird high-tech 21st century polymer. When in fact it's probably just the Botox. Exactly. Marty was there before me. Can't move her face? Too much Botox? Dude, she is so wasted on Botox. Right. Mrs. Trump cannot open her mouth. Exactly. So at 20 minutes past the hour, big thanks go out to Silent R. Lamar. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar. Silent R. Lamar just made it possible for me not to have to say another blessed word about fundraising tonight. Thank you very kindly, Silent R. Lamar. That was a big, big, big thing you did and a big help indeed. Thank you. So we'll just go on now with the rest of the program, shall we? Yes. But that's what made the day sort of ugly. And then along comes the news of the massive earthquake in Mexico, which this time somebody it got hold of Comrade Kumquat long enough to say, hey, maybe this time you should tweet out some goddamn condolences since you missed the last earthquake. We feel very terrible for the people of Mexico, the beautiful country of Mexico, and their terrible earthquake, and we're right there with them, and that's why we're going to build a big, beautiful wall between... No, he didn't say anything about the wall. But he did manage to get some condolences out. The death toll is already up north of 40 people. There's video out there you can see of the buildings in Mexico City shaking. Of course, there was a previous earthquake a week or so ago that killed more than 80 people. That was the one he couldn't manage to scrounge up any condolences for. So classy, so very classy. But just because I've done so much reading on the pre-colonial history of that region, most people, I mean, even if you look at Google Earth, Mexico City, back prior to, say, 1519, there's an argument to be made that Tenochtitlan, which became Mexico City, was the healthiest, biggest city on the planet. You know, working sewer systems and the works, you know, regular bathing, something that was absolutely bizarre to the dirty, unwashed white European Spanish colonials who invaded. It might have been even demonic. It probably was. But when they arrived, there were actually a number of cities in the Valley of Mexico, Tenochtitlan being only the largest. There was Texcoco, and there were, you know, there was one big lake that they thought of as three different lakes. And because the Spaniards cared absolutely nothing for their environment and their surroundings, they immediately, upon conquering the Valley of Mexico, one, deforested it, and two, began the process of intentionally or filling in the lake, Lake Texcoco, Texcoco, Lake Texcoco. And so, prior to the Spanish arrival, that lake had been there. There was traffic on the lake in big, you know, freight canoes and little swift canoes, and there were canals through Tenochtitlan. It was even the Spaniards recognized that it was somewhat similar to Venice, only, you know, clean. But over time, they managed to fill in the lake, brutalize a brilliant ecology, so that today Mexico City sits on that dried up ancient lake bed. And if you want to think about an earthquake's impact in that area, visualize, if you will, a fresh a freshly baked pan of brownies and a freshly refrigerated pan of Jell-O. Maybe think of, say, the San Andreas Fault in California as the pan of brownies. And you know how the cracks will appear in the surface, in the crust of the brownies. And, you know, if you pull them, they'll come apart along the cracks and things like that. Visualize Mexico City as that pan of Jell-O. Now, since we're visualizing, you can visualize your hands holding the pan of brownies. Shake the pan of brownies. Nothing much happens. Maybe it spreads out a little bit along the crack. Now shake that pan of Jell-O side to side. Yeah, see the ripples and the waves run through it? That is the land upon which Mexico City is built. And so consequently, a lot of the stuff that's built on top of it, now pile up some two- or three-story mini marshmallow houses on the Jell-O. Now shake it again. Watch what happens to the mini marshmallow houses. They fall down, don't they? Yes. Once again, it's a case of the indigenous people who had lived there for thousands of years figuring out what they needed to do in order to live in those surroundings, whereas the colonial invaders show up, don't have a clue, care less, know even less than they care, and this is, 500 years where you wind up. You also wind up 500 years later with Mexico City, the urban sprawl of Mexico City, once again returning to its former status of one of the largest, if not the largest, urban center on the planet. Fascinating, huh? And of course, the population of Mexico City is not primarily Spanish. It's Creole. It's the population is a mix of both Spanish and African and Native. The worm turns, the worm turns. Well, thank you, Arthur. Early cowbell for Arthur. And we're back with Food Geography with Bob Kincaid on the Food Network. No, the Food Network, or Food Geology for that matter. Well, no, but the thing is, that former lake bed is still gelatinous under there. Also, according to the legends of the flight of Cortez, when the Mexica people finally drove him out, the greedy Spaniards were trying to carry all the gold they could carry, take it with them, and halfway, part of the way across the causeway, on the way out, across the lake, it was still there. They had to jettison the gold in order to survive, and God only knows how far into the crust of the earth. Through that mud, that gold has sunken. But legend has it, it's still there. Maybe the amorphous, multi-limbed people from Norblap 9 will find it someday. And they'll wonder why we were so fascinated with it. Or maybe the 6-foot-tall race of sentient cockroaches. Who knows? They like things like, mud. So we've got both of those things. Of course, along the way, in his speech today, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini did manage to make it sound as if only the United States of America had been hit by hurricanes. He started talking, "Oh, the American people are strong and tough people, and we'll get through, but thank you to everybody who sent cards and letters. Thank you so much," without so much as a word about, say, British Virgin Islands, St. John's, Tortola, without a word for Barbuda, which was flat, just absolutely flattened or maybe a word for a word of kindness for San Martin and St. Martin's. Yeah, no, them, not so much. So now we watch Maria. Maria, which was mentioned in the program last night, and during the program, actually, strengthened to Category 5. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, if you go back and you look at the number of even hypothesizing, from like 1850 to 1900, no Category 5 storms. And then from 1900 forward, the number of Category 5 storms over a period of time, well, they just become more frequent. Not that climate change has anything to do with it, because, of course, we all know that climate change is a Chinese hoax, which is, of course, why Xi Jinping wasn't sitting in the audience today. It had nothing to do with the fact that he felt like his time was more valuable than to sit around and watch a mentally deficient sociopath whose brains have been hollowed out by spirochetes blather on at the microphone. Sure. Exactly. Jim knows his Mesoamerican history. That night, when they tried to get away with the gold and lost the gold and got run out, that was La Noche Triste, the sad night. Sad because the Spaniards lost all of their gold. Not all of it. They managed to recoup quite a bit, really, when you get right down to it. Just not the stuff that they dumped into the lake bed. The last remaining vestige of the magnificence that was once Lake Texcoco remains in the area of Mexico City known as Xochimilco. Xochi, meaning, or having something to do with flowers, I believe. It was the flower garden of Mexico City. Yeah, yes, indeed, Kid Mark in the chat room noting, climate change is a Chinese hoe with an axe. Damn! Yeah, you got it. You got it, Kid Mark. It was 41 minutes that felt like 2.5 hours. And there was nothing of any redeeming value about it whatsoever. And somewhere out there, I can't help wondering if maybe Elton John, hearing Rocket Man, Rocket Man, Rocket Man, I can't help wondering if Elton John at this point in time is maybe wondering if this is the payback for his having taken the filthy lucre to play at Flush Flimball's last sham wedding, after which his wife, of course, honeymooned in a pit. My friends, it puts the lotion on its skin. Yeah. Charlie Pierce over at Esquire, immediately since we were going full Elton John, referenced Madman Across the Water. I've got another, and you know, because it's Geography Day, right? Another geographical reference for Donald Trump that may show up as the bumper for the program partway through. When we get to the top of the hour. Yeah, it probably will. It probably will. So, you know, if you want to talk about Trump's speech later, you're more than welcome to. I just, as is so often the case, I watched it as I do every time he opens his disgusting gob. I I get the sense that ours is a dying country, and that we're not gonna. This is gonna be one of those things we don't get over. If you are a fan of history, as am I, you know that. I know. Silent R. Lamar says, Bob, damn, I've been in the clown tent for 7 months. Do you know where the exit is? The show's killing me. Look, this is... It's like we're living through... We're living through... I don't know, a play by Jean-Paul Sartre. In the original French, the play was called Huis Clos. And it was published in 1944. And in English, we call it No Exit. Three characters find themselves in a room, and they don't necessarily know why they're in the room. And they spend the play trying to figure out why they are where they are, and I'm not going to spoil it for you. But the conclusion to be reached is, let's just say that I don't know. Maybe Rod Serling was an early reader of Jean-Paul Sartre. We'll just put it that way. But No Exit. So I understand. I understand, Silent R. Lamar. At least P.T. Barnum provided his marks with a sign that said this way to the egress, and then charged him a nickel to kick him out of the circus. We don't even get to pay the nickel. We're stuck. We're here. But from a historical standpoint, if you take the long view and you look at empires, and it doesn't matter where those empires are, it happens all over the planet, more particularly when they're hereditary, because you just don't know when a good king is going to sire the next terrible king, or when a really shitty king is going to have a good following monarch. And I don't mean to be sexist in saying that, but mostly it's kings. What immediately came to mind for me was the Byzantine Empire, which, of course, even to its final days, considered itself to just still be Rome, because it was. And if you look at the history of the Roman emperors, you know, Julius Caesar was never an emperor, but he was father of the imperial dynasty. That sort of mouth-closed, sort of upper-crust British accent. It's not a dynasty, it's a dynasty. But looking at the long list of Roman emperors, who knows what Caesar would have become? Because, you know, et tu, Brute, and all that. Generally, history takes a fairly decent view of Octavian, who becomes Caesar Augustus, who is the model for Geezer Disgustus. Tiberius, who comes after him, not so much, becomes pretty much a paranoid, raving madman, and begins the terrors with Sejanus, that we talked about the other night. After Tiberius, you get, woohoo, wait for it, Caligula. Caligula has to be done away with by the Praetorian cohort. You know, when even your own bodyguards go, oh, no, this can't happen, this isn't going to work. And then he goes all pincushion, and you get Claudius. And Claudius is generally thought of as having been a pretty decent emperor. After Claudius, you get Nero. Now, the interesting thing here is that it's a little bit telling maybe for us, in the grand scheme of things, this isn't... Okay, so Octavian was barely blood-related to Julius Caesar. He was his grandnephew. Tiberius, who follows Octavian, becomes Caesar, many think largely because of the machinations of his wife, Livia, whose blood son Tiberius was, and she wanted to make sure that none of Octavian's blood kin got the throne. And then along come, and you can look up the family tree. Jesus Christ, it's like a, it's a tangled, it's not a tree so much as it is a spider's web. But anyway, there's not that, there was some hereditary aspect to it. Then you get more dynasties down through the years, the Flavian dynasty that yields up Marcus Aurelius, from whom we get the idea of Marcus Horalius in the form of Donald Trump. The problem of an empire trying to find a leader, and the problem of the people who generally want to lead empires, historically speaking, it doesn't work out so well. And when you look at the Byzantine Empire, it's the same thing. Every once in a while, you get a good emperor who does a good job, and then everything goes to shit for a century or two. Or you'll get one or two or three or four good emperors, so you've got a good century, and then you got 200 years of unmitigated chaos. Same thing with czars. And look, same thing with, kings, monarchs, absolute monarchs. Jesus, look at the French crown. By the time, Charles the Sixth? By the time Charles the Sixth comes along, he's so goddamn inbred that he winds up being so mentally ill that he has fits of thinking that he's made of glass and is afraid that he'll shatter. He lost his mind on a trip one time and just turned around and murdered four of his knights. You can see the same thing, although I don't have the knowledge base to talk about the various dynasties in what we recognize as China, but the same thing happens. I can say, for instance, that with Kublai Khan, we mentioned him the other night. He was a brilliant ruler, an autocrat and a tyrant, of course, an absolute monarch, overseeing a Mongol-administered state that had real ambitions for reaching out into the wider world. And so it was under Kublai Khan that the treasure fleets went out and went all over the world. And some people even think may have explored as far as the western coasts of the American continents. Some thinking that there's compelling evidence that they actually rounded the horn, the Cape of Good Hope, and made it up the west coast of Africa a ways. But guess what happens after that? Kublai Khan dies, the Mongol Empire falls, and China contracts and pulls in back upon itself and becomes very deeply introspective and uninterested in the wider world. The ancient Greeks, from good leader to bad, not just the democracy portion, but the autocracy and oligarchy and plutocracy portions of ancient Greece, same. And if you draw it all the way down to modern history, you'll find that really the history of the American presidency is a history of more mediocrity than greatness by a considerable degree. But we have never, ever seen mediocrity on this level. Or perhaps because of the interconnectedness of the world today, maybe the mediocrity becomes more amplified, more pronounced, more exaggerated. a mediocre American president in the mid-19th century, he might not, you know, might not have that much impact. As noted, Babs Bush's grandpappy, great-grandpappy or whatever, Franklin Pierce, is largely thought by historians to have been the biggest alcoholic ever to inhabit the White House. And that's about all there is to say about him. James Buchanan was a titanic fuck-up because of his desire to play footsie with the South. And, you know, it just give in to the South, give in to the South, give in to the South. And he assuaged his conscience from time to time by buying slaves and getting them across the Ohio River and freeing them in Ohio and Pennsylvania, maybe largely Pennsylvania. But that was a sort of act of contrition on his part. The post-war, presidents, Grover Cleveland, Rutherford B. Hayes, they are, you know, Chester A. Arthur. Garfield's memorable because he gets assassinated and he actually wanted to do something, especially in regard to race in this country. But it's, you know, up to McKinley, it's largely a parade of forgettables. And maybe this is something we can extrapolate into more broadly into institutional leadership generally. There just isn't that much greatness to go around. For instance, as I've noted, the court system in the United States gets things wrong as often as it gets things right. We tend to remember historically infamous Supreme Court cases more than we do their right decisions. And in point of fact, there are probably more wrong decisions. Dred Scott comes to mind, slaughterhouse cases, Plessy versus Ferguson, the First Amendment cases of the First World War in which Holmes was involved, Schenck, Froework, and Debs. So maybe it's institutional, but the problem is we are at that stage. And you know, look at the beginnings of the American presidency. You start with Washington, who becomes president sort of by default. Nobody else really. I mean, there are others who might have been interested in the job, but there was no way that they were going to get it because George Washington, and he's got a royalist tinge, and he maintains himself in state, and people have to bow and kiss the ring and scrape, and some of that had to do with the fact that he had Alexander Hamilton close by him. And Hamilton himself was an admitted monarchist. And then you get your first mediocre president, John Adams. All of these guys were brilliant revolutionaries, but it came down to the dirty business of actually governing and running a country. And I mean dirty in terms of getting your hands dirty, not necessarily in terms of corruption, although that was born with the country. That's baked in, too. You get your first mediocre president out of Adams, along comes Jefferson, and we deem him a great president because he expanded the country, but he did so by flying in the face of everything that the Constitution said. After Jefferson, you get Madison. Madison, you get Monroe. This is what is referred to as the Virginia Junto. Virginia, a slave state, controlled the country during its most critical formative years, with the single exception of John Adams. And then you move into the era that's also blighted by the so-called Great Awakening, which is actually the death of the Enlightenment. And you get Andrew Jackson, who becomes who was deemed a great president because he was so damned effective at committing genocide. And because of the debates surrounding whether or not we should have a Bank of the United States. And then you get, you know, Van Buren and you know, one of the classic cases of a man who was actually born and bred to the idea of the presidency, John Quincy Adams, who by the time he gets to be the president of the United States, which was all he was ever raised to be, turns out not to be much of a president. And then it's just bullshit, you know. James K. Polk, who set the template for later George W. Bush to start a war against a country that had never done a goddamn thing to us, in Mexico. And, you know, Pierce and Buchanan, and then along comes Abraham Lincoln, who was a great president largely because of the Civil War, but who also had political theories that, as Dr. Bill has pointed out on a number of occasions, he rejuvenated the idea of the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence had fallen into disuse and really wasn't well remembered until Lincoln largely rehabilitated it and brought it back into the public consciousness. And after Lincoln, it's going to be a long damn time before you get a great president. Teddy Roosevelt's deemed to be great because he recognized the road to ruin upon which we were riding as a result of the so-called trusts, the great corporations, the Standard Oils, and so forth. And that's the end of great presidents until FDR. And so we find ourselves here in 2017 with a president who is not only not great and is so far below mediocre, but he's actually a clear and present danger to the continued existence of this country such as it presently is. And that was on display in living color today at the UN. For me, the gagging started early when he started talking about the Marshall Plan. I have no doubt whatsoever that Donald Trump has no idea what the Marshall Plan is. Yeah, Marshall put together a plan, and more people are recognizing the great things Marshall is doing. And then there was this moment. I mean, and I couldn't believe as I looked at Twitter that I wasn't seeing, you know, GIFs from, you know, the Spanish Inquisition skit by Monty Python. This is a quote. It was in the same period, exactly 70 years ago, that the United States developed the Marshall Plan to help restore Europe. Okay, by the way, just as an aside, what became the Marshall Plan was originally proposed as a much more financially ambitious plan, and the money was sucked out of it by the Republican Party. Just saying. But then he said, oh my God, he said, those three beautiful pillars, they're pillars of peace, sovereignty, security, and prosperity. Three beautiful pillars. And I watched a bunch of coverage of the speech just because I went, well, peace, sovereignty. Let's count this again. Peace, sovereignty, security, and prosperity. That's four. Three, sir. Our main weapon. No one expects the Spanish Inquisition. He literally cited three pillars and then listed four things. It couldn't have been more plain had he held up his four stubby little fingers and counted them off. The angry Indian asking me, did he really say that? I got the transcript. I went and checked the transcript because I didn't trust my lying fucking ears. Those three beautiful pillars, they're pillars of peace, sovereignty, security, and prosperity. The Marshall Plan was built on the noble idea that the whole world is safer when nations are strong, independent, and free. And, you know, those are the three pillars, strong, independent, and free. And, of course, you have to consider those terms in light of a little something that had happened out in central Missouri long about the same time that the United Nations was coming into existence. Harry Truman's chum, Winnie Churchill, racist extraordinaire, Harry had invited him to give a speech out at my old alma mater, Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri. And Winnie said, I'd love to, Harry. I'd love to. And so he shows up in Fulton and he gives a speech and he says, an iron curtain has descended across the face of Eastern Europe. Which nobody in the Foreign Office in the UK had any idea he was going to say. Nobody at the Home Office knew. Nobody knew. The only person who knew was Winston Churchill. The United States didn't know, and the world went bonkers. And the Soviet Union about had a shit conniption. And out of that, for a generation after that, the countries within the Soviet domination, the block of Soviet domination, become known as the countries behind the Iron Curtain. And in the modern era, I refer to the states south of the Mason-Dixon line as being the countries behind the Cornpone Curtain. See how it works? Yeah, well, okay. Brother Deacon A said with a fair point. Regarding those three pillars, come on, Bob, you can't expect the douche canoe to cipher live on the air in front of the UN. And once again, rubbing it in, Ron, in the far and freezing north, already I'm sure the wolves are beginning to howl at the verges of the sodden golf courses. Ron says, all I'll say about today's debacle is that I'm so fucking glad that I'm a Canadian citizen. Meanwhile, Robert in Australia, it's duck speak, Bob. Either that or how many fingers am I holding up, Winston? Right. Three. You know, even though he's holding up four or whatever the number was. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh. You have to remember, Bob, this is the shit you get when you let a white supremacist write your speeches. Stephen Miller wrote this crap. That's true. That's true. John with a note says, to me, the greatest danger is the mold of qualified presidents is over. Now any celebrity can run and win. See Ben Affleck, Kid Rock, etc. One word. Oprah. Oh, who else is out there thinking about being presidential? I've seen it periodically. Oh, damn it. It'll come to me. Somebody will email me. See, that's the thing. Remember when Dim Leader told us that what we got to do is we got to run government like a business, like my friends at Enron. You know, he said that shit. And then, of course, Enron went, you know, straight to hell. there is a value to actually knowing how government works. Because government has a purpose. You know, as Madison said, you know, if men were angels, we would not need government. But we're not. And so we have to have structures to sort of keep things in line. There we okay, obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, courtesy of Earther. Ooh, how many lights, Picard?
There are four lights.
Precisely. Thank you for the obligatory Star Trek reference. But we're... not kidding, according to Brother Deacon Asa, Scaramucci announced he wants to run for president. And you know, the nature of the concern, as John mentions in his email, it's true. And look, that too is a part of the evolutionary process of imperial administration. And you wind up sometimes with a Nero who really would have been much happier if he could have just been allowed to be an actor and to stand and declaim while accompanying himself on the lyre. Now we have a liar who just stands and declaims. Well, I'm giving myself a cowbell for that. Hell with it. You know, Marty says one word, Arnold. I know. I mean, look, it was through long, horrible history that Great Britain finally figured out that it was that Parliament needed to be somewhat professional, and that the monarchy needed to be entirely ceremonial. Jesus, the long string. I nerd out on history, and so the other night Agnes and I were watching something about the Battle of Towton during the Wars of the Roses, in which. The Yorkists finally forced Henry VI, who was, by the way, related to Charles VI. He was his grandfather and inherited the madness. Right. But, you know, and the bloodshed and the horrors and Jesus, Cromwell and the... Until you finally realize that you can't trust genetics, and you can't even necessarily trust an emperor to choose the next emperor who isn't even related to him. And even then you wind up with some jackasses. I mean, I forget what I was tuned into last night or the night before, whatever, but I saw someone blathering along with Tony Blair, and the first thought out of my mouth was, well, goddamn, what's he got to say that anybody needs to hear? Because he was just a colossal fuck-up. He blithely followed along in dim leader's footsteps as we were dragged off into an illegal war in Iraq, who's, you know... after effects we continue to feel to this day. So, I mean, so the whole thing started with the Marshall Plan blather and went downhill from there. And once again, if there was a real God with a handful of lightning bolts up there, the speech would never have been completed. Because when Clementine Caligula said, We do not expect diverse countries to share the same cultures, traditions, or even systems of government, but we do expect all nations to uphold these two core sovereign duties, to respect the interests of their own people and the rights of every other sovereign nation. Well, you know, if there was a real God up there, it wouldn't... and game over. Respect the interests of our own of their own people? Are you kidding me? When even as he was speaking, the Republicans in the Congress were trying to figure out one last attempt to take health care away from 10, 20, 30 million human beings. One final attempt to sign death warrants on 10, 20, 30,000 human beings who will just fucking die for want of access to health care. And the rights of every other sovereign nation. Well, that got taken. That got the lie put to it later on in the speech when he was blathering on about North Korea and Iran. Strong sovereign nations let their people take ownership of the future and control their own destiny. And strong sovereign nations allow individuals to flourish in the fullness of the life intended by God. Which God, dipshit? Because I'm pretty sure you pissed off about, 70% of the audience there. Because not everybody worships, you know, your God. And, well, we all know that your God, Donnie, is Mammon. You know, something was said at the Emmys. Stephen Colbert said it. And it sort of had a historical echo, the way the how many lights do you see Picard thing echoes back to 1984. In the ashes of the Second World War, with the knowledge that that the little fucker with the Charlie Chaplin mustache and a taste for genocide had tried his hand first at being a painter, largely of the Impressionist school, it appeared, had tried and failed. Some people said, you know, if people just would have bought his paintings enough to support him as a painter, none of this ever would have happened. And so Sunday night at the Emmys, Stephen Colbert echoed the same thing. If you people would have just given him an Emmy for The Apprentice, we probably wouldn't be in the mess we're in right now. For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost, and for want of an Emmy, a nation was lost. You get the idea. It's a mess that begins in 1927 or earlier in Jamaica, Queens. 1927 being the year that old man Trump was arrested at a Klan riot. And it proceeds forward to, 1944, 45, with the Marmalade Mugabe's birth. I don't know if there was ever a reason to spit on the ground. That's one. And it comes into our present. And time is a web and not a line. And the intersections are both angular and tangential. And things like today make me hope direly for the truth of all those alternate universes. Because I want there to be an alternate universe where Trump isn't president. You know, he said, this week gives our country a special reason to take pride in that example. We're celebrating the 230th anniversary of our beloved Constitution, the oldest Constitution still in use in the world today. The only problem being that it's really not much in use today. There was no small amount of irony when he said, the greatest in the United States, the greatest words in the United States Constitution is its first three words. They are we the people. When in fact, fat dead Tony Scalia declared quite some time back that the entirety of the beginning of the Constitution has no legal force and effect whatsoever, that they are merely decorative flourishes, the things that are contained in the preamble, because the preamble has the dangerous parts about promoting the general welfare and stuff. Another lightning bolt moment. Our government's first duty is to its people, our citizens, to serve their needs, to ensure their safety, to preserve their rights, and to defend their values. Now, you're not serving anybody's needs by taking their fucking health care away from them, Donnie. But also, there's, you know, because I'm a practitioner of the art of word knowing, there's that pronoun. Our government's first duty is to its people, to our citizens. Those are possessive pronouns. A country whose constitution begins with the words, we the people, does not, in describing the citizenry, use possessive pronouns. The government does not possess the citizenry. Their needs. The word, the pronoun their is an othering word. It means that there is a difference between government and people that actually was not supposed to exist in the core philosophy of the Constitution itself. All too true, all too true. Ron, who is busy waxing the skids on his dog sled, says, I remember reading a piece of graffiti on a bathroom wall in Saigon that said, withdrawal is what Nixon's old man should have done. Grammar aside, I think the sentiment applies to the orange toilet clogs old man, too. Yes. Then he pissed and moaned about the Iran deal, which, oddly enough, everybody but Donald Trump agrees Iran is adhering to. Yeah. But, of course, the takeaway started with, the scourge of our planet today is a small group of rogue regimes that violate every principle on which the United Nations is based. They respect neither their own citizens nor the sovereign rights of their countries. Rogue regimes, huh? If the righteous, oh God, and this is straight out of, this is straight Stephen Miller Nazi speak. If the righteous many do not confront the wicked few, then evil will triumph. Somewhere, Margaret Mead is having a shit hemorrhage. It was Margaret Mead, wasn't it, who said the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing? Well, that's a take on that concept. No one has shown more contempt for other nations and for the well-being of their own people than the depraved regime in North Korea.
It's responsible for the starvation deaths of millions of North Koreans and for the imprisonment, torture, killing, and oppression of countless more.
And then he brings up Otto Warmbier, who got arrested in North Korea and arguably should never have been in North Korea. He took a tour there courtesy of a Chinese a tour agency. And once there, he tried to, you know, filch a propaganda poster, and that, you know, pretty much got him into the North Korean justice system. Ta-da! All of a sudden, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini got a case of the feels for Kim Jong Bad Haircut's brother.
We saw it in the assassination of the dictator's brother using banned nerve agents in an international airport.
Really? We did? You and that mouse in your pocket?
He kidnapped a sweet 13-year-old Japanese girl.
How do you know she was sweet? Were you sending her dick pics, Donnie, on Snapchat or something?
From a beach in her own country to enslave her as a language tutor for North Korea's spies.
And then we got this, and this is the takeaway. This is the thing that makes it, you know, kind of gets you feeling all existentially and stuff.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. That's what the United States Nations is all about. That's what the United Nations is for. Let's see how they do.
Suddenly, he's not part of the United Nations. The United States is the United Nations is a they and not a we. So he threatened to totally destroy North Korea. A couple of paragraphs after complaining about the North Korean regime starving millions to death, he's willing to roast them in a nuclear holocaust. Mm-mm. And then off to Iran. And Venezuela got a swipe.
And loser terrorists.
And somewhere along the way, every time he opens his mouth, America dies a little bit. And there was also mention of how he was so happy to be speaking to the world from his hometown of New York City. He's a jumped up pissant from Jamaica, Queens. Okay. Now, I mean, okay, the five boroughs, whatever. Everybody's a New Yorker, I guess. But still, you get the idea. He's a jerk from Jamaica, Queens. And, of course, there's more stuff to talk about this evening. This is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday, and this has just been a long meditation on just on one particular manifestation of Titanic intellect. But we got more. Lord God, Billy Bob, we got more. We got more than we can reasonably be expected to cope with in such a short period of time. So let's take a little break. Steve in New York pointing out, well, thank God he didn't present as a complete caricature of the ugly American. What part it wasn't? I mean, there's only a couple. Oh, by the way, while people were, while he was blathering on about the abuses of sovereign rights and taking care of the needs of citizens, you know what one word, you know what, there's a word, and you can do a sort of global search, but just copy that, put it in a word processor, and look for it. You know what one word you won't find there? The jerk from Jamaica Queens uttering? Rohingya. Rohingya. No Rohingya. Who are being slaughtered, murdered, driven from their homes by, and you know, this is when you know that you got a religion problem, that it's gone, that it's viral across the planet. The Rohingya are being persecuted by pissed off fundamentalist extremist Buddhists. Just saying extremist Buddhist should make my mouth just, what? That's like a bloodthirsty gine. But guess what? In the 21st century, they exist too. No mention of the Rohingya in that speech, because you know what? Shh. The Rohingya. Or if you're listening to the BBC, the Rohingya. I don't know. I'm saying Rohingya. The Rohingya are Muslim. And they are an oppressed minority. And Donald Trump, A, doesn't have any idea who they are. And B, since they're Muslim, he doesn't give a flying fuck at a rolling donut about them. So much for the Rohingya. So much for the pearl-clutching and the hand-wringing about the abuse of people by brutal totalitarian governments. Oh, and while we're at it, so much for Aung San Suu Kyi. Oh, I remember when Aung San Suu Kyi was the darling of the pro-democracy movement the world over. She got the Nobel Prize, lived under house arrest under the brutal military dictatorship in Myanmar. Myanmar was a pariah state. Well, now she's the leader of the government. And guess what? That pro-democracy activist is sitting blithely by while the Rohingya get slaughtered, while a genocide is underway in Myanmar. See, that's the thing about democracy. It's not always the neatest thing since sliced bread. Might be a good time to recall that Plato sort of despised democracy because it was a democracy that murdered Socrates for, you know, knowing too much and asking too many questions. So being as how it's Tuesday, Titanic Tuesday on the horn, this 19th day of September 2017, 23 minutes past the hour. Gosh, let's take a break and we'll check in, among other things, we'll check in with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen in the Green News Report. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. It's Elton John Day, the world over. When she gets up in the morning, it's enough to wake the day. Oh, she turning on the radio and dancing on my head. There's no good living in the sun, playing guitar all day. Boogalooing with my friends, and I do rock away. Come on, Jamaica, Jamaica.
It's Tuesday, September 19, 2017.
Residents bracing across the Caribbean. Puerto Rico boarding up. The second major hurricane bearing down on the island in less than 2 weeks.
Caribbean islands bracing for impact again.
It's Tuesday, September 19, 2017.
Residents bracing across the Caribbean. Puerto Rico boarding up. The second major hurricane bearing down on the island in less than 2 weeks.
Caribbean Sorry, I had to bracing for engage the Omega again, 13 device.
This time from Hurricane Maria with more storms in the wings.
Well, we've had bigger storms than this.
Actually, we haven't. Trump's still in denial about the climate link to extreme weather. Interior Secretary recommends 10 national monuments for modification. Plus,
it is mankind and his activities which are changing the environment of our planet.
As the United Nations gathers in New York, it's the 30th anniversary of the first global climate treaty.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The big news is Mother Earth's quest to murder us all.
That is big news. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I hate to say it again, but here we go again.
Yeah, unfortunately, as we go to air, Hurricane Maria rapidly intensified and slammed into the island of Dominica in the Eastern Caribbean on Monday as a powerful Category 5 storm, according to the National Hurricane Center. Fueled by unusually warm ocean waters in the Atlantic, Maria poses an extremely dangerous threat to Puerto Rico and the same Caribbean islands that were devastated by Hurricane Irma just days ago. Now, with the added concern that debris left behind by Irma could become dangerous projectiles.
This is very scary.
And they're still searching for food and water and fuel.
Yep.
Hurricane season isn't over until November, and there are numerous storms spinning in both the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans with plenty of ocean heat energy to propel them. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, predicted that 2017 would be an unusually active hurricane season.
Nailed it.
And yeah, they were right. But even two record storms hitting the United States in less than 2 weeks has had no impact on U.S. President Donald Trump, who told reporters aboard Air Force One that, despite the warnings of climate scientists, he still sees no link between global warming and more intense hurricanes.
Well, we've had bigger storms than this, and if you go back into the 1930s and the 1940s, if you go back into the teens, you'll see storms that were as big or bigger.
And no, that's just not true. Depending upon which metric you use to measure it, doesn't matter, only one or two storms could be considered possibly bigger than Irma. And Trump also told reporters he never knew there was such a thing as a Category 5 hurricane.
Swell. But he seems to know with certainty there's no climate change to worry about.
Meanwhile, the Washington Post has published a leaked report by Trump Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke recommending which national monuments established by previous presidents that Trump should modify, an unprecedented and potentially illegal attack on protected public lands that are coveted by the fossil fuel and mining industries. Zinke recommends shrinking 10 national monuments, including Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante in Utah, and he suggests allowing more extraction within the monument's boundaries, what Zinke calls traditional uses like commercial logging, commercial fishing, coal mining, and fossil fuel drilling. Native American tribes, conservation, and environmental groups have vowed to sue to stop any attempts to modify the monuments. The Trump EPA is also rolling back two regulations limiting water pollution caused by the coal industry, a rule to limit the amount of toxic wastewater that coal plants can dump into your lakes and rivers, and the EPA will rewrite regulations protecting groundwater from coal ash waste that environmental groups have called, quote, a ploy to scrap the protections entirely.
So when you say rewrite the laws to protect the groundwater, they're rewriting them to do away with the protection altogether.
Exactly. As world leaders gather for the United Nations General Assembly meeting in New York City this week, Trump still intends to withdraw the United States from the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement, the historic international accord signed by all nations to cut the greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous climate change. The New Republic reports that other nations, led by the European Union, are now considering extracting a cost if the U.S. breaks its pledge to reduce its emissions by potentially slapping carbon tariffs or a border adjustment tax on U.S. imports and exports. Finally, this past Sunday marked the 30th anniversary of the day the world's governments signed the Montreal Protocol, agreeing to end the use of chemicals that were destroying our planet's fragile, protective ozone layer. It was humanity's first global climate treaty, and it is succeeding in repairing the ozone layer.
Imagine that, when the whole world comes together and makes a goal to try to save the planet. It actually works. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Goodbye.
And here we are at 27 minutes before the hour, and John, out on the road somewhere, has patiently waited for quite some time for me to finish the filibobster. Let's check in with him. Hey, John.
Can you hear me all right?
I hear you just dandy.
Yes. Highly expensive Bluetooth-y device this time.
Okay, well, you're not crackling or breaking up or anything, so it's a bonus.
Yay. Well, I think And I had an interesting conversation about this today, but I think most Americans don't realize the significance of Russia, Britain, China walking out on Trump's speech today.
Well, they didn't walk out so much as they just weren't there.
Well, a lot of people just don't realize that that is a direct, in diplomatic terms, that is a direct slap in the face of the United States.
Sure it is.
It's the first time it's ever happened.
But I would urge the United States not to take it personally, and I would encourage Donald Trump to take it personally.
Now, I mean, the old saying goes, the difference that makes no difference is no difference. I mean, we elected it, despite, when I say we, I say as a country, but
yeah, what,
we elected that jackass.
What do you mean we, Kemosabe?
Yeah, right. But in their eyes, we elected that jackass, and like you pointed out in your filibobster, I mean, the level of it, I mean, whoever wrote his speech must have had like wooden ears to hypocrisy, because holy crap, I mean, countries need to respect other countries. Yeah. Now, can we say Iraq?
Unless, of course, it's us and we respect no one.
Yeah. I mean, I could just imagine the entire booth of translators up on the upper deck translating. I can almost guarantee some of them are like spitting water, and they have the people on the floor are having to put their hand to their ears. And can you say, repeat that again, please? What? Oh, my God. It's like, holy crap. And, I know it's not something that you might not be particularly interested in, but the various moves by Venezuela and China and stuff to price their oil in other currencies other than the dollar, I mean, that it's all coming together, and it's like wild that it's gonna be so tough for everybody to sit there and deal. I mean, it's going to take years to recover. Even if Trump were to be impeached tomorrow, it would still take probably the better part of a decade to repair all the damage this guy's done. And I have no doubt that he's going to stick around for at least a couple more years. And it's like, yowch.
Yeah, and the question becomes one, John, of how much damage can he do in those couple of years?
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, I argued. I said the thing.
By the way, you kind of got on the wrong side of GK with that we elected Trump. He said, we elected Trump to be leader. You got a turd in your pocket.
Well, it's my birthday, so give me some break.
Well, that's true. So, happy birthday to you, and happy birthday to Larry, and happy birthday to our buddy, the Angry Architect in Australia. So you've got some good company today.
That's great. But I sat there, and I only listened to part of his speech.
Oh, I sat there with the Clockwork Orange, you know, eye openers on for the whole 41 minutes.
Well, I kept my eye on the crowd every time they did a little pan or something like that, and, you know.
Well, you've seen John Kelly, haven't you? The White House chief of staff.
I'm surprised he didn't just do seppuku right there in the floor.
I mean, you know, the thing is that those things that John Kelly was doing, that's the same thing he would have done if he'd whipped out his tiny little member and started playing with it in front of the entire gathering. I mean, that's the you know, with your little head and your little hands and just, you know, and then the thumb on the thumb on one temple, the middle finger on the other, you know. And you know, he's not praying. It's that, you know, that's Excedrin headache number, you know, Dolt 45.
Oh, yeah. I can just imagine that the damn alcohol bill in the White House has got to be going through the roof. You know, go see the president, talk to him for 5 minutes, go back out to your office, open the drawer, take a shot. Because that'd be the only way you could possibly tolerate it. Because the guy is a flaming idiot. You know, and I mean, I don't know whether he's ill or sick, but there was a report that came across my little feed system here that was talking about the fact that people have noticed that. And again, this is, you know, so much.
I don't know if he's sick either, John, but I, you know, I watched this because I've got DirecTV now, and that's how I watch things. I watched it on the screen of my iPad, my ideologically impure iPad, and you know, the resolution was good enough, and that, you know, his skin looks weird.
Well, his skin looks weird, but the report I was talking about is that he's got a reputation now that towards the end of the day, like, you know, around 3 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, people are noticing that Trump's speech starts getting real slurred.
Well, yeah, that's what Alex Jones was talking about last week when he said, my friends, they're drugging the president. They've got him on some sort of heavy drugs. That's it. He's slurring his words.
Despite your accusation, I don't listen much to Alex.
Well, I did. It was not an accusation, John. Don't get all prickly on me.
I know. I'm just giving you a little teasy. But yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing about it. I mean, that's one of the downsides, and I'm not trying to be ageist or nothing like that, but, you know, we've got, you know, ever since, like, Ronald Reagan, there's been, you know, with, of course, the exceptions of, like, Obama and Clinton, you know, you get these really old people. The presidency is a hard, hard job.
Geezers. The word you're looking for is geezers.
Well, I'm trying to be nice. But, yeah, I mean, I, like I said, I spent time in government back in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, I saw it up close. I mean, you'd watch these guys. And, you know, it's the you know, 16, 18-hour days, 6 and 7 days a week. You know, these guys, you know, this is not a job for some 70-some-year-old guy who up until this point, he pretty much set his own schedule.
Well, all right. Okay. So let me offer up a little bit of a challenge on that broad statement you just made, John. Not being argumentative, but I see a lot of people out there with hashtag Bernie 2020. Okay.
Oh No.
You're not okay with having a guy be inaugurated as president in his 79th year on Earth?
I don't. I don't believe so. And it's and here's part where I'm coming from, and I'm going to try to say this.
Well, hold on. But let's work through this. Let's process through this.
All right. But you see, here's
if
part
2020,
where I'm coming
if
from,
in 2020 your choice is Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump, what do you do?
Oh, and if it's down to just that's the only two, then it's, you know, I'll roll my dice with Bernie. But here's where my problem is, and this is where I'm coming from, and we'll see how it flies. I believe that every generation of people, they grow up in a certain a worldview, certain mindset. And Donald Trump, you know, yes, he's an ass and everything else, but a lot of what I hear coming out of his mouth is the same stuff that I would hear out of relatives of mine, because my relatives were born in Southwest Virginia. And that ingrained racism and things like that is there. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, although people can make even Herculean attempts to change and to grow and things like that, it's like Robert Byrd, you know. He made the public comments that he learned and changed and what have you. But he did that pretty late in life. So it is possible. But for so many of them, those mindsets are still there. And, you know, it's like we're entering into a world where technology and social change is happening. And people like Donald Trump are just – and even Bernie Sanders, you know – He's got some areas where he's got some, you know, stick in the mud type stuff. Okay, you know, it's not his fault, and it's damn sure not as bad as most of his opponents. But nonetheless, you know, you got a mindset of someone who grew up in the 50s and 40s and things like that, and they saw the world a certain way. And I think for us to really to deal with things like climate change and economic problems and the world changing like it does, we're going to need to have somebody more like, and I'm not using Obama as an example, but somebody more like his age group would be far better to be in a position like that. Because like Donald Trump, if our guesses are correct, and let's for a moment go conspiracy theory, this guy, he's not going to – I don't see him making it all the way through 4 years and then running again and doing so successfully.
Okay,
you
think he's going to I don't want to visit from the humorless guys and women with the black coats and the skinny ties who talk to their shoes. Are you saying you think he's going to die in office?
I don't know about die.
You know,
but
the more
time.
Whoa. I mean, not being argumentative, John.
Yeah.
But I want to get through. You say you're not saying die. Well, then you're talking about incapacitated. But he'll still be president because no one in that cabinet will trigger the 25th Amendment.
My personal guess, if I were to actually say, okay, let's throw some bets on the table. I have a feeling that he is going to either – something's going to happen. He's either going to stroke out or something is going to happen that's going to be so blazingly obvious. It's kind of like let's take that one event that happened here about a couple months ago where he got off Air Force One and then kind of wandered away from everybody, and they had to kind of chase him down to bring him back to his car. Imagine if that event happened not on a secure tarmac, but say while he was moving from his limousine into a venue to be of a speech or something, where he gives a speech and he just goes completely.
How do we know it hasn't?
Maybe it already has. But what I'm saying is that just looking at him the way I'm like you, I looked at him on the TV today. I've looked back at pictures of him back in the earlier days, and he looks nothing like he actually looks. He does. When you start to compare what he looked like 5, 6, 7 years ago and what he looks like now, he looks terrible. He looks absolutely terrible. And we, like I said, I mean, he impresses me. Let me put it this way. He impresses me like my Uncle Arthur did. My Uncle Arthur, he didn't look like Donald Trump, but he's acting like him. He's talking like him. And I just, when I was listening to the speech today, I couldn't help but think, damn, he sounds like my Uncle Arthur. And Uncle Arthur was going into dementia at roughly about the same age. He was like 73, something like that. And by the time he was 76, he was in a home. That's how fast, once it becomes past just the little sparkies, like I used to call them sparkies, where he'd forget something for a minute or forget where he put his keys, you know, the normal stuff that most people do. But it got to a point where, you know, within about 3 years, he went from being relatively, you know, reasonably cognizant person to, you know, here's some Jell-O pudding. Do you know who you're talking to today? And, you know, like I said, I'm not saying that to be mean to the guy or anything like that, but that's just, when I was listening to him today, I was seeing my Uncle Arthur all over the place, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe, you know, because you've got people forget, this guy doesn't have a doctor that, you know, is like a super board certified, you know, guy that did, by, you know, 10, 20 years in the military or something like that as a doctor. He's got this wild-haired wacko that certified him as being the most healthiest presidential whatever. Do we really know what his health is like? And I would say no. I'd say that that there's some skeletons in that closet.
Well,
back there,
you know, health. I like to take things and sort of turn them around and look at them from different angles, John.
Sure.
And so, you know, last week or whenever it was, we had the clip of Alex Jones repeating Roger Stone, of course, who is a notorious goddamn liar and agent provocateur. And Alex Jones was saying, they're slipping something to the president. It used to be sharp as a tack, and now he's slurring by 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well,
let's pull back from that and let's turn it around. Now, like you and like ever so many people, I have had occasion to know people who weren't, as the aging process went on, became less and less lucid. And it was my experience, and I'm talking about my grandmother here, because she lived with us, and we watched her slow, tragic slide into Alzheimer's or dementia or whatever. Her best time of day was in the morning. And as the day wore on, she would get worse. Instead of Alex Jones saying, somebody's slipping something to Trump that's making him at the end of the day, what if they are giving something to Trump that keeps him moderately well, you know, sane, early in the morning? And I lost John. That sort of thing happens. I don't know. Maybe, you know, he's driving along. He may be lost his cell service, but. What if that's the case? Maybe they give him his anti dementia meds early in the day, and they sort of the half life of them, which means the effectiveness of them, becomes less pronounced later in the day. And I'm not saying that's happening. But if a neo maxi zoom dweeby like Alex Jones can say, they're slipping him something at the end of the day, what if what happens to him at the end of the day is his default normal? what if it's what they have to do at the beginning of the day that creates the semblance of normalcy? Brother Deacon Asa with a note says, speaking of geezers for president, why don't we practice a simple rule of thumb? How's about we put into office a person who represents the average, not median, age of the electorate in the country? In the United States, if I'm not mistaken, that would be 43.2 years. Well, wouldn't that be interesting? Well, I'm having all kinds of internet fun here. Hold on, let me see what's going on here. That's what I thought. Thanks, Frontier. You suck. And one of these days, when I've got time to call and scream at them, maybe I'll be able to do something about that. All right, let's connect somewhere else. Jesus, what a frustration. Did I? Nope, gotta turn it off, Bob. Gotta let that connection reset. God. If you ever have to have internet through Frontier Communications, you have my undying sympathy. Anatole in the chat room. Welcome back, Mr. Bob. Frontier sucks. Oh, the suckitude of Frontier Communications, it cannot even begin to be calculated. Even that new base 60 mathematics that they discovered on a cuneiform tablet from Iraq probably couldn't calculate the overall monumental suckitude of Frontier Communications. So that wasn't John running out of signal. That was Frontier crashing. Has 30 seconds passed yet? Okay, let's reboot the goddamn modem. I know. Oh, I know. No. Thank you, Randy. I know. The stream signals were never affected. It just, yeah, the other stuff. All right, let's check in with Jim. Hey, Jim, what's happening?
Hello. Oh, you? How you doing?
I'm
speaking down for a second, buddy.
Yeah.
Did I hear someone mention hexadecimal arithmetic base 60?
Yeah, and I don't know if you've gotten those speakers yet, but they're, yeah, it sounds like you have. Yeah, there was some mathematicians and researchers announced that they had found a cuneiform tablet that had been just laying around. Oh, no, speakers are still going.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. So they're talking about numbers in hex.
Well, I mean, I don't really know how it works. I mean, I remember, you know, like fourth and fifth grade learning about base 6, base 10, base 11, you know, where you've got, so you're counting, you know, and you've got 60 different, I don't know. But they had, and apparently they used it for calculating, for things like pyramid construction, and it led to really intricately fine-grained, accurate algorithms.
Well, I remember those in my first computer class, because we started with, you know, with base 10, then the base 2, and then hexadecimal. And have you ever tried to do problems using that arithmetic?
Well, like I said, I remember fourth and fifth grade, and I actually kind of enjoyed it.
When you came out with letters instead of numbers?
Yeah. You came out with different symbols because you had to have different symbols because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 0 wouldn't quite get the job done.
That's right. But
so like in a base 11, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9... ?10
Right. Well, nonetheless, I remember having to do those manual calculations and stuff. I was basically a base 10 kid. My first computer class in programming was assembler, and that was just a lovely thing to have to do.
Is that different from compilers?
Yeah. And I can remember when I would be taking long plane trips to wherever, where I was going to California, Alaska, and stuff like that, I would sit with a pad and do calculations and those numbers. And I was sitting next to a guy. He said, Hey, buddy, I don't mean to, you know, interfere with what you're doing, but I've got a scientific calculator here. I said, I'm just trying to just keep my mind.
Well, you know, the Mayans worked in base 13.
It's just amazing, these numerical systems and how they operate. But nonetheless, away from that, going back to our man in the White House and his speech today, you know, I listened to it, and I sort of like did a linear flow on it. And so, okay. And then after it was over, I started thinking about stuff he had said, and I thought to myself, this man is absolutely fucking crazy.
And, you know, you can sit there and just cherry-pick this thing to death. It's 41 minutes. But there was another moment, and of course I've been told that I support Nazis because I pointed it out on Twitter. He made a reference to, and I think you'll pick this up, Jim, the Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it used to be the Ukraine when it was just a province of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
But now it is Ukraine, a presumably separate and sovereign nation apart from Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, all these areas were, you know, provinces of the Russian Empire.
Yeah, but, what I got to thinking about is, you know, could that be because the people that he deals with refer to it as, you know, the Ukraine?
Possibly. Probably.
And remember, of course, Paul Manafort, who probably maybe has an indictment forthcoming, he began being wiretapped by the FBI on a FISA warrant back in 2014 because of his sketchy, skeevy relationship with the doing PR and other dirty work for the Viktor Yanukovych regime, which was decidedly pro-Russian and apparently stole the country blind before it was run out in a little revolution.
Oh, yeah.
But the other side of that that's interesting is that, so, you know, CNN broke the story that, yes, the FBI had been wiretapping Paul Manafort since 2014, and then they got a new warrant last year. And all the little maggots said, see, Trump was right. Obama was wiretapping him. And even Julian Assange, that right-wing turd, Julian Assange said, Trump, Obama's wiretapping me. CNN, that's crazy. CNN, Trump wiretapped, ta-da, or some, you know, some dipshit tweet like that. And it's like, you know, he is such a transparent little, well, there's that word again, turd. Because the fact of the, and I always think of the line, it's such a wonderful use of the word, the line in Winter, where young King John looks up, and I think he's looking at Richard and says, "You turd."
Yeah. He wasn't too happy with either any of his brothers, was he?
No,
you know.
But Assange doesn't realize that, you know, the FBI doesn't go to the president to get a FISA warrant. They go to the FISA court, and the FBI doesn't even necessarily tell the president. So Obama didn't order the wiretapping of Trump, and unless Trump wants to be in deeper shit than he already is, wiretapping Paul Manafort is not the same as wiretapping Trump, unless they're engaging in telephone conversations in 2014, in which they discuss, you know, fun stuff like a Russia connection.
Well, some reference was made to the fact that Manafort's phone or his cell phone was being tapped, and Trump was there with him, and you could hear Trump in the background. And that's something I heard today. I'm not sure about what exactly that meant. But I guess maybe they were having some type of confab. I don't know.
So it's, you know, that's, just to let people know what's going on there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there yesterday, I'm sure. But Trump did his, as well as I guess he could, his tour of the horizon, his tour de raison of everything, and then was repetitive and kept going back and saying all kinds of stupid shit. And, you know, like you said, he pissed off at least three-fourths of that people in the General Assembly this afternoon.
Well, if you look at that photograph that shows John Kelly having Excedrin headache number, oh my God, the world's going to, he's going to roast the world. You'll notice there are empty chairs in front of him, one marked France and another marked Zambia.
Yeah.
Jesus, even the Zambians couldn't be bothered to show up for him.
No. And he seems to think that he has the command of the entire world's civil structure in that particular chamber. That's how he sees himself as being.
And, you know, he's such a petty little pissant that you know that he insists, no, Stephen, I mean, you're working on it. This is a good-looking speech, but I'm not going to be happy with it unless I get to call him Rocket Man.
That was just too much. I mean, you've got this little fart over there in North Korea who is basically an accident looking for a place to happen. And, of course, Trump comes around and says that Russia and China are behind him. How does he know that, particularly with the Chinese?
Well,
North Korea is, you know, the child of mainland China. You know that. I know that.
Right. And you know, one of the things where some sanctions could make a difference, and this is just real, there are shit tons of tens of thousands of North Korean workers working in Russia. And you know how Mango Mussolini gets so upset because, you know, the Mexicans, they're sending the rapists, and they come here and they make money and they send all their money back to Mexico. Well, the very same thing happens with North Korean workers in Russia. They get paid, and they send the money back to North Korea.
Of course they do.
So that's one.
It works.
Two is that there are sketchy, shadowy banks in China which operate with a nudge and a nod and a wink from the Chinese government and provide the pass-through, the funding pass-throughs, whereby North Korea can evade sanctions.
There you go.
Those two things are very real.
Absolutely. Oh, going back to Mexico, I enjoyed the reference he made that he had just talked to the president of Mexico, and the president of Mexico said, I haven't talked to him in weeks. I mean, talk about getting caught in a lie. I mean, that's got to be one of the, I mean, you can't believe anything that asshole says. And I think I said this before on this program. You know, he speaks anonymically. He speaks in antonyms. Whatever he says, believe the opposite, and you might get a 90% correction on that, you know?
Yeah.
He's just absolutely, I don't know what's going on in his mind or whether he's has onset of Alzheimer's or whether he's being given medications and things like that, and the half-life of those medications, depending on the time that he takes them. I don't know, but there's just something that's not right, and I, to tell you the truth, I was so ashamed to see the president of my country address the General Assembly of the United Nations today, after that speech is over, and it sort of filtered through my mind as to what he said. I mean, I didn't even have to take a pad and pencil to write it down to say the importance of it.
I mean, like I said, he has become a walking Monty Python sketch. He listed three pillars, and he mentioned three pillars and then counted to four.
Yeah.
Fuck.
I know.
You know, just from the Little Ray of Sunshine department, I got a note here from Kim in New Jersey. And Kim says, Trump is here through January 2025. Get real. He's going to outlive most of us here. He will be reelected easily in 2020. Bernie's running and will again suck the life out of the Democratic Party. Let us remember that Reagan was not lucid from the beginning and was also elected twice. Trump is not on anything. He's no more crazy than he was 20 years ago. His fans love his craziness. He will never recover from We will never recover from his next Supreme Court nominee. Never. I've said it before and I'll say it again. We are fucked.
Yeah, remember back when Reagan was trying to do an endorsement to get Sununu elected as governor, and he was doing a spot for Sununu's campaign. And this is sort of a documentary about Ronald Reagan on PBS and or CNN. I'm not sure which. It may have been both. But Reagan could not get that thing pronounced right, and they had to do, I don't know how many takes. And he looked like, you know, when he was trying to do that speech, as a deer caught in the headlights of a car. Like, you know, what's going on here? And God only knows, out of camera, what type of cue cards and stuff they were having. And they even showed people trying to tell him how to pronounce John Sununu's name. And Reagan just looked like he was totally paralyzed there for a bit.
He didn't know when to stop.
No, I mean, you know, even back when he was lucid, so to speak, and he was governor of California, or trying to be governor of California, all of his contemporaries, people, yeah, you know, the Screen Actors Guild and stuff like that, said, oh, shut the fuck up. All he does is just run his mouth. Will he please shut the fuck up?
And I'm pleased to announce the appointment of John Shinanana.
I think I've actually seen that clip.
It wasn't very reassuring, and, you know, that Saturday afternoon speech that Reagan made, we start bombing Russia in 5 minutes. I thought to myself, where in the fuck did that come from? Then he realized there was a hot mic in his office, and, you know, that scared the shit out of a lot of people. I know it did me. I said, what in the hell is going on? He used to do the Saturday afternoon.
I have declared the Soviet Union illegal. The bombing begins in 5 minutes.
Yeah. I remember that. Good Lord in heaven. And then when he was trying to promote that Star Wars thing, the SDI program, I mean, I was watching him do that. And honestly and truly, it's as if he halfway knew what he was talking about, but the cadence and the content of his speech were so irregular, it was almost frightening. We're going to carry the war into outer space, and here we are dealing with the Soviet Union, and you can imagine how that, speaking of turds, boy, did that one put a turd in the punch bowl. And we got someone just like Reagan. I think Reagan's a hell of a lot better than Trump, to tell you the truth, because at least Reagan was considered by a lot of people to be a pretty nice guy, that he would give you the shirt off his back. He was generally good-natured. Maybe that's so.
Well, unless you were a teen starlet that he'd just banged, and then he'd give you a cold hamburger.
Yeah, that's that was one of his big dates.
And bitch about the price of condoms.
Right. Oh, there's so much. Kitty Kelly just loved doing that thing about him. I've just picked up a couple more of her books. One is Jackie O, and the other is about Elizabeth Taylor. And I can't wait to see what she says about Mrs. Kennedy. I hope it's not too vitriolic. And I hope it's not too vitriolic about Elizabeth Taylor, because I really admired both of those women and have liked them very much, you know? But there it is. Another thing, I heard that there have been lights seen in the sky. And abnormal things happening in the atmosphere. And those conjoined with the Mexican second earthquake within a week. And then these storms. And I'm going to say this. I do believe that Maria is definitely going to have impact right here with you and me. I just feel that in my bones. That's all there is to it.
No, I saw one prediction earlier today that Maria might get sucked out into the Central Atlantic, but
I don't know, the
models are, you know, the cone gets so wide at this point of the predictions that, you know, who knows? I mean, it could wind up anywhere. As for those lights in the sky, I saw some lights in the sky last night.
I wonder what they were.
I know what they were. They were United States military jets, fighters.
Okay.
And I mean, I noticed it, no, because
just checking.
No, I heard the mushrooms haven't the mushrooms hadn't kicked in yet, Jim. And you know, I need new batteries for the aquarium pump powered, you know, bong with stirrups.
There you go.
But no, I heard the you know the sound. I heard the distant sound.
Well, some woman called Randy Rose this afternoon. She was saying that there were mysterious lights in the sky that have to do with the perturbations of heavenly bodies and.
Okay, so I can get to that in a minute. But so I ran outside, and yeah, there was 3 or 4 military jets, probably out of the Norfolk Naval Air Station, that were out having fun flying really, really low over the New River Gorge and the Gauley River Gorge.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of ask yourself, gee, I wonder what they're keeping their hand in on. And so you run over to Google Earth and you start looking for mountainous gorges in North Korea and things like that. And we already know there's a bunch of mountainous gorges in Iran. And like I said, they're just keeping their hand in. But yeah, there's a the rapture is predicted for Saturday, Jim.
That's what I was told.
This is, of course, crazier in the head than a hog is in the ass. But the rapture is predicted for Saturday, and it's got something to do with prophecies in the book of Luke and the Babylonian identification of the planet Nibiru, and it's just freaking loony.
Now, Nibiru, is that a planet that is sort of to be co-joined with us? Or what?
You can kind of make it up as you go along, frankly. Now NASA, naturally, things that NASA should, you know, NASA's got a limited budget, but things they shouldn't have to do. NASA actually wasted some time to point out that no, there's no such thing as Nibiru. If a planet was approaching Earth, we would have been watching it for weeks, months, and possibly years, because that kind of thing is kind of hard to miss.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
But this one huckster has declared that the rapture will happen on Saturday because he just happens to, it's Nibiru, just happens to have worked out the numerology because he knows the secret Bible numerology code.
Like the Millerites did?
Yeah, pretty much.
What was it, 1848, when that was supposed to occur?
We had one of those rapture predictions just a few years ago. Yeah, the planet Nibiru will collide with Earth, according to a Christian numerologist.
Well, you know, I remember back in 1970 that there was a... And I knew this lady at my father's bank in Camden named Edith Rush. And she was an extremely intelligent, excellent person who could definitely she definitely knew her job, but she sold everything she had, let her, all of her assets go. And I talked to her on the phone before she left her job, and I said, "Miss Rush," I said, "what's going on here?" And she said, "the world's going to end." And they were called the True Lights. And boy, were they in for a really nasty surprise. It just didn't happen. And it was Edith Rush. She was a very nice lady. And as a matter of fact, she said, "you know, all these people who have overdrawn accounts and stuff like that, I'm just going to mark them out because it's not going to make any difference."
Woo.
And I said, "well, if my name should come up, don't forget me." And I just said, "well, good luck." And I don't know whatever happened to her. I really don't. But I heard that on Randy Rose this afternoon.
Well, Agnes has a mean streak. She keeps telling me that she wants to go and buy blow-up dolls. And she wants to fill them with helium. And she wants to put clothing on them and stuff and just release them some afternoon, like, say, in downtown Beckley, and let them float up to the sky and be conveniently... I'm giving it all away. She's going to be so mad because this... And just some stand nearby and yell, "oh, my God, it's the rapture!" And watch all the and watch all the little fundamentalist maniacs lose their minds.
Well,
take me.
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you. There was quite a conversation between Randy Rhoads and somebody who actually believed in this, and of course, Randy Rhoads, being Jewish, saying that she didn't have to worry about it because she had already been counted in. And she wanted to go up in her favorite pair of pumps or something like that. It was just kind of bizarre.
That would be her. Yeah.
Oh yeah. She is a character.
But this all stems from the fact, and I'll share the audio here in a minute. This all stems from the fact that on Saturday, the 23rd of September, the moon is going to be in Virgo, the Virgin. The only problem is, there's nothing particularly special about that. That happens at least every 12 years or something like that. It's one of those predictable astronomical events because there is a certain clockwork to the universe.
Well, you know, no wonder Jim Baker, and I had to catch him on Daystar. I didn't realize they would let him on TV until the other day.
Oh, did you catch him selling bucket pudding?
Yeah, I sure did. I mean, I thought to myself, I didn't recognize him at first because he's completely bald and white-headed and has a beard. And then I thought, I turned the TV up and I said, "oh my God, there he is." And the stuff he is selling in those buckets looks so damn nasty.
Well, and frankly, like I've said before, is not the phrase bucket pudding, doesn't that just sound filthy? Doesn't that just sound like something you'd find in you know, one of the old dirty movie theaters in Times Square back before it got turned into Disneyland? Yeah, that just sounds vulgar. Bucket pudding. Come here, honey. I want some of your bucket pudding.
42nd Street. I guess I don't know, but then he's married to some woman now, who's there on the show with him, and she kept echoing everything he said. She kept nodding her head like, you know, a bubblehead doll or whatever you want to
call
it.
That's her job. You know, she's got to submit to her husband as the church submits to Christ.
Mm-hmm. And I just could not believe that they would let that son of a bitch back on the airwaves after the show.
Yeah, he's operating like out of Branson, Missouri or something. He gets these little captive, free lunch. Here's your bucket pudding.
And he said, "if you send me $7,000, I will guarantee that you will have enough food to last you for something like 7 years or something like that." That was his latest hustle yesterday.
Yeah, but the thing is, after you spend the $7,000 on the bucket pudding, then you have to spend another $7,000 on the guaranteed packets of dehydrated water.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on, Jim, help me. Work with me. Dehydrated water?
I heard you, Bob. I was just going to wait till you came back with that. I understand that. Good Lord. Well, I mean, you know. It really is just incredible how he has people who are probably buying that stuff.
Sure he does. I mean, there's a reason that we do this bit at the beginning of every by the way, have you ever tried charismatic carrots? Just a few charismatic carrot capsules in the morning will make you feel frisky as a bunny rabbit. Charismatic carrots from charismatic carrots from Horn Labs. And there's a reason we do that, because that is the fuel upon which the vast majority of talk radio runs.
Well, I thought you were trying to give me something that will give me a little pride by stride, maybe tilt to my kilt.
Well, it helps with that, too. Have you ever seen a carrot, Jim?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But even if you, it works for both genders, because after all, I mean, we know,
I like
with the rabbits.
Myself.
Yeah.
The zucchini. I remember that scene from, oh, God, what was that film they did? About the, it was shot in Oregon with, what is wrong with me tonight? The college thing. Animal House.
Yeah, Animal House.
And he was in the grocery store with Mrs. Ferber, the dean's wife, and she was talking about,
because I'm such a nerd, I love the scene with Mrs. Dean Farber's wife and the disquisition on the difference between nauseous and nauseating. But like I said, I'm a word nerd. Hey, Jim, lovely conversation. We will talk again soon, I trust. And don't forget those charismatic carrots, okay?
Well, okay, you take care.
I'm going to try and turn your speakers back up, because I've got the audio for the Nibiru Rapture ready to go. All right, we'll talk to you later, Jim.
All right, good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from not too terribly far from here. Yeah, I really do. In the midst of, there it is. Thank you. Thank you, Sparky. Bernard Brand dehydrated water. Empty contents of can into 1 gallon of water. Stir until dissolved, chill, and serve. New from Sputnik Industries. Dehydrated water. You know, I can't stand water. Never have been able to. The only way I can take water is through... never mind. It's just... And, you know, that's why we run this program on, listener contributions, instead of trying to connive you into purchasing shit that's no good and does you no good and is an abject hustle from jump. Okay? That's why we operate that way. Before I go back to the phones, let's check in with Rapturist. I could save this for tomorrow, but let's just get this out of the way since Jim mentioned it. David Mead. Everything comes to an end Saturday. So, everybody send David Mead your money, because, after all, you're not going to need it after Saturday. See how the hustle works? Yeah. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun. Ooh, ominous. With the moon under her feet. How's she breathing? And a crown of 12 stars on her head. Uh-oh, she's knocked up. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. I think I remember this from a Monty Python movie. Oh, now she's talking to a dinosaur. Then another sign appeared in heaven. An enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on its head. Its tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky. It apparently has atrocious breath. The dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth. So that it might devour her child the moment it was born. Yeah. She gave birth to a son, a male child who will rule all the nations with an iron scepter. Iron? and her child was snatched up to God and to his throne. Snatched, even. September 23rd, 2017, this heavenly sign appears over Israel and Jerusalem. There's a lion apparently dragging a woman by the neck or something. Down behind Jerusalem. This sign has never happened before, except the time that it happened 12 years ago. And 12 years before that, the woman is the constellation Virgo. She is crowned with the 9 stars of Leo, in addition to Mercury, Mars, and Venus. She represents Mary and the nation of Israel. Do tell. The moon is under her feet, and she is clothed with the sun. The dragon represents Satan and his global dominion. And the male child is Jupiter, which will have been in Virgo's womb for the length of a human pregnancy. Jupiter? I thought he was a pagan god. Oh, the male child represents Christ. So Jupiter's going to be Christ's father? And his church. And footage of a bunch of people looking at the Aurora Borealis, the Aurora Australis, and there are ambulances, and oh my God, the earth is beginning to shake. It must be Mexico City. We're back to the bowl of Jell-O now. But it's, oh dear, even the firefighters can't stand up. Oh no. Behold, it is him. And now we're in some city, and someone's setting off fireworks, and... Oh, for pity's sakes. Yes, yes, Asa. Sputnik Industries, really, Bob? Hey, wait, I'm not in the chat room? What the hell happened here? Oh, we must have had a collapse. Okay. Did I turn this back on yet? Yeah, I did. Okay. Okay, well, I'm back in the chat room now. And I forgot to give... I'm sorry, I got wrapped up in conversation. I forgot to give Jim props from Steve. So Steve from Georgia Stan says, hi, Jim. And I'm sure Jim will email me and say hi back. Steve's leaving the chat room. Good night, and give our fondest regards to Miss Karen, Steve. You guys enjoy the evening. So, that having been said, let's run back to the phones, and check in with Scott and Punky.
Hello, Bob.
Punky got the first word in.
Yes, he often does. I didn't watch the speech of Mr. Trump at the UN today.
Well, you've probably got more living brain cells now than I do.
Well, I'll probably watch it later or catch fragments on the various newscasts that I watch. But I did see a little item online about the speech mentioning a quote that a fragment of his remarks today. And it got me to thinking about something about him. I guess if you have to choose from among the many things about him to be concerned about, this would be probably the thread that runs through all of his pronouncements since he began running for president, which seems like forever ago. But he used the phrase, you know, we'll have no other choice but to destroy North Korea, or words to that effect. And that's what got me thinking. Somebody who has access to LexisNexis or whatever that database is,
yeah,
that can key in a phrase and find out how many times so-and-so has uttered it, and there's no bigger so-and-so than Donald J. Trump, needs to do that, because when do people not have a choice? To my way of thinking, they don't have a choice if they're dead. okay?
All right.
Any other excuse beyond that is bogus, because the only time you don't have a choice when you're not dead is when you fail to recognize that you always have a choice, at least on some level. And time and again, in all of his rally appearances and his speeches and his various pronouncements and tweets and interviews, one constant refrain keeps popping up, and that's that phrase, we have no choice. And that troubles me. And I mean, granted, whether they're slipping him something early in the day or later in the afternoon.
Or not at all.
Or not at all, or whether he's got early onset dementia or he's just an asshole or whatever. It's still not helpful to view yourself and your situation in that framework, because that...
Well, I mean, to get on, just to cue up another obligatory Star Trek reference, that's the essence of the Kobayashi Maru. A no-win situation is a situation in which you have no choice, because the whole purpose of a choice is to provide an alternative way forward. If both ways end in disaster, that's no choice. Yeah. Or then, you know, you can get all, where's Tim from L.A. when I need him? He's a big Rush fan. You know, there's that, you know, that Rush line, those who choose not to decide still have made a choice.
Yeah.
But I get your meaning, but I also want to sort of put in more concrete terms. When he says we will have no choice but to destroy North Korea, let's understand that what that is a threat. And, you know, in former times, theoretically, under our constitutional system of governance, Scott, a president who threatened to eliminate, and see, we didn't have this rhetoric in the Cold War. Yeah, well, by God, we're going to wipe, you know, if they so much as lift a finger, we'll wipe out. Because we knew how goddamn dangerous that was, that kind of rhetoric with the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't even play well when Khrushchev, you know, took his shoe and banged on the podium in New York, okay?
And it wasn't even, just incidentally, because it was in the news the other day, it wasn't even in terms of rhetoric. It was in terms of our technology, our safeguards, so to speak. The colonel or lieutenant colonel or major in the Soviet Army who died back in May, it was just announced in the last couple of days, apparently in the mid-80s, the warning...
He stopped a nuclear war.
Yeah, and what it was, it wasn't missiles being launched by the West. It was the reflection of the sunlight on the clouds. Was the satellite mistakenly took that to be a launch of U.S. Missiles aimed at the Soviet Union.
It was 1983.
And he thought it through. He said, wait a minute. If they're going to attack us, they're not going to do it on the basis of five missiles, which is what the warning technology was indicating. So he figured it out. And he said, no, let's pause. Let's take a breath. You know, and I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's not just the rhetoric, but our flawed technology can work against us, unless there are people in charge who have sense enough to
agreed. I was just trying to put his threat in concrete terms. North Korea is a nation of 25 million people. Of those 25 million people, if we assume a million person military, then you've got 24 million people who have absolutely nothing to do with North Korea's nuclear program. Now, to threaten to murder 25 million people over a question of nuclear technology is to engage in something that is recognized in world legal circles as collective punishment, Scott.
Yeah.
And collective punishment is like when, a member of the Warsaw Ghetto Resistance would go out and slit the throat of a Nazi soldier, and the Nazis would gather up 500 Jews and just shoot them on the spot. 500 who had absolutely nothing to do with what the resistance member did. That's called collective punishment. The Germans did it in World War I in Belgium, too.
The nuns used to do it in my grade school back as a kid.
Well, I mean, they weren't shooting people, but yeah.
Well.
Yeah, everybody loses recess because little Scotty's bird won't shut up.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there is a general uniform recognition that collective punishment is contrary to the rules of civilized nations. And yet today, Donald Trump brazenly stood before the world and said that he was willing to engage in collective punishment and murder 25 million people over what is arguably a diplomatic and military disagreement.
Yeah, and the collateral damage is probably going to be South Korea and maybe Japan.
And North Korea, and not North Korea, and China. Depends on which way the wind blows.
Exactly.
But and he also went after Iran, and you know they're upset at Iran because Iran keeps testing missiles. You know who Iran has used their missiles on lately?
Well,
ISIS.
Yeah.
And the maximum supreme leader, what's his name, Rouhani, of Iran said, "Yeah, we're working on some missiles. You ever heard of the Iran-Iraq war?" And, you know, the fact that we were subjected to missile strikes from Iraq daily for freaking years.
And of course, where did... weren't those U.S. missiles?
Yes. You know, because that's where you get that photograph of a younger Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein and grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush.
Yeah. Because we are very quick to change partners in the dance of international relations. You know, we're best buddies until we're not, you know? Speaking of which, have you been watching the Ken Burns documentary series about Vietnam?
Not yet.
Well, I hope you do. We're only two episodes into it. But what I've seen thus far has been quite impressive. And I think there's a lot to be learned from people sitting down and watching that. And it has relevance even today, because there are some who will tell you the fact that we've got Trump in the Oval Office is a carryover from the war, anti-war conversation through the 60s and into the early 70s, vis-a-vis Vietnam.
I saw an interview with Ken Burns in which he said our current political climate is directly traceable to Vietnam.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's going to be a lot for people to learn if they'll sit down and invest the time and turn off all their devices except their television and watch this. Because one of the things that I like a lot about, and once you watch it, you'll see, he takes all comers in the sense of people on this side of the battle, people on the Vietnamese side of the battle. He wants to hear from everybody when laying this thing out. And one of the smartest things he did was to avoid the usual suspects, the usual talking heads and experts on the matter of Vietnam. And I think that will work for him in the sense that, you know, he's hearing from the actual combatants, not the ones who sent the combatants into combat. But anyway, but you would think that if there were, taking it back to our present day, you would think that if there were grown-ups anywhere in the vicinity of Trump, or even on Capitol Hill, or even former officials in government, there should be someone who can take him by the hand and set him down and say, Donald, you know, you're saying there's no choice but to dot, 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 and then lay out the places where a choice it's paramount to have a choice and to recognize you have a choice.
A man who says he has no choice is a man who is hiding the fact that he desires to do that which he says he has no choice but to do.
Yeah, well, yeah, there is that.
I mean, this man has a hard on. He wants to see a nuclear device go off. I mean, if it weren't for the environmental damage that it causes, you know, he's become really BFFs with Emmanuel Macron of France, and you know, they're known for still exploding testing nuclear devices out in the South Pacific. You know, maybe yeah. Macron could invite him to come and watch a nuclear test so he could see one go boom. But those are all underground, underwater. He wants to see one go off. He wants to see the mushroom cloud. And he gets off on thinking about the murder and the death because it's a manifestation of power for a man who is power mad and has never, you know, he's never had the power he actually thinks he has or has projected that he has, because he has always been a servitor of debt. He's always been in hock to somebody else. He's never been his own man. He's always been somebody. He's always had some creditor breathing down his neck, and he desperately wants to project an image of having being the most powerful man on earth. And he doesn't realize, Scott, that he can be that by leading the planet toward a more peaceful place. He only understands power as being a projection of violence.
Well, and this business of his debt over his lifetime, at least in business, and who knows, maybe, you know, as a kid, he was ripping off his little pals. But all along, his response to that situation has been to say, fuck you, to whoever the person is to whom he owes money. Setting off a nuclear device or two or three or a dozen over North Korea basically is the ultimate fuck you, not only to North Korea, but to the planet. And, you know, he can show that he's the big man he's always fancied himself to be. And that's scarier than shit. I mean, when you think about it, you know, he's we're all a bad moment away from destruction with this guy. I mean, potentially.
Yeah.
That's why I'm hoping that there are grown-ups the room.
And it is notable that Xi Jinping was not in the room when he delivered that speech today, Scott, when he said, we will have no choice but to destroy North Korea. Well, China has said specifically that if the United States attacks North Korea, China will defend North Korea.
Yeah, because they're under a treaty obligation to do that.
So does dipshit Donnie, does he think they're bluffing? Has nobody told him how many people there are in China? Has nobody told him that the city of New York, the largest city in the United States, is a goddamn rounding error? Compared to virtually any city in China?
As Red Fox, that noted political and social and wartime correspondent, once noted, the Chinese, and this was 40 years ago when Red Fox said it, but the Chinese, according to Red Fox, could build a human bridge over here with people left over to cross over that bridge and invade us. You know, which is another way of saying there's a shitload of them over in that part of the world.
Yeah.
You know? But
the Chinese have proven in the past that, you know, they are willing to sacrifice their own populace in tremendous numbers. I mean, they've got more people than we got bullets.
Well, they as far as their regard for individuals, you can go back to the olden days of China. When they were building the original Great Wall, the workers who fell right in their place there out of exhaustion became part of the fucking wall. They became building material. You know?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, that I just, that thing about no choice, we have no choice, we have no choice, and his adherents and his fans and his groupies eat that shit up because they know even less than he does, okay? They buy into it without a thought.
Right, because and we come back to the fact that to a maggot, or to the maggots, to the maggots, Trump sounds like what a smart person sounds like to a stupid person. Or Trump is what a stupid person thinks a smart person sounds like.
God, wait a minute. You're making my head hurt.
Trump
Say
is,
that again.
Trump is what a stupid person thinks a smart person sounds like.
Okay.
Because, okay. I mean, for instance, I earlier today I caught on CBS News, I caught on the app there, I caught them interviewing Dr. Michio Kaku talking about the Mexican earthquake. And, of course, he relates things very sanely and very cogently and very intelligently. And probably the average maggots would be lost. They'd be tuned out after they heard Kaku. I can't understand nothing they're saying. Click.
Yeah.
We will have no choice. You know, and they turn the channel and there's somebody talking about no choice but to murder 25 million people.
Well, when it comes to Trump, and I wish there was some way to impart this to his adherents and followers and groupies.
And there isn't.
But I wish that there was a way. I had his number early on. In the sense that he's nothing but bluster, bombast, and bullshit. And anybody who thinks that Donald J. Trump is the answer to anything simply does not understand the question that's been posed. And that's it. I mean, there's just no, you know, we can say amen, take up the final collection, and head for the exits, because there's nothing more to add to it. So, but Punky will try. I don't know what's with this damn bird. He's very quiet all day until I call you. So
he likes
anyway,
me. He really
well,
likes me.
Yeah. What's his name? Chuck Schumer was having his Sally Field moment the other day. I thought that was kind of sad.
Well, I think it was a weirder commentary on Trump, but I get the point. Well,
yeah.
Scott, it's been a delightful conversation. I've only got a little bit of time left in the evening, so we will talk again soon, and I don't know. Maybe Punky wants to go for a walk or something, or a fly.
At the rate we're going, Bob, all of us have just but a little time left, which ought to make something.
You know, I'm gonna turn you into a full-on pessimist before we're done.
Well, you're getting there. You're getting there, and if that doesn't make something, you know, the fact that all of us have but a little time left, if that doesn't make a couple of things pucker, I don't know what will. So,
well, I hope we've got. I hope there's more time. I'm fond of the human experiment. But I get your I get your meaning. Scott, you
all
and
right.
Punky have a good night.
Okay, you too, Bob.
Bye now. Scott and Punky calling from San Diego, where they no longer have a football team, and where the former San Diego Chargers game that was played in Los Angeles on Sunday was, shall we say, scarcely attended. Earther pointing out, no choice. You mean like when W gave Saddam 24 hours to surrender before we started bombing, Brother Bob? I have no choice. Yeah, that's exactly what I mean, Jesus. A few notes coming in. One, a commentary from Reverbo, the human boy. Repairing what Trump's done is contingent on a huge assumption that there will actually be a successful effort to do that. One, the bigger picture is not how to fix what he breaks, but what is the realistic possibility of fixing what's been broken since 1980. And that's exactly what I was talking about when I said, if you look at the long history of empires, you find, yeah, okay, we got a good one here, or we got 100 years of... And history looks at those and calls those golden ages, when the people who lived during them mostly called them just shit doesn't suck quite as bad. You know, there's no sign that, because, you know, generally if an imperial administrator or emperor or whatever, dictator, tyrant, puts up a sign saying, golden age, golden age, golden age, you can bet it's not. You know, there are probably golden age neon lights blinking all over North Korea. But that's for history to judge. And so, you know, if you begin to think about what needs to be fixed that was broken since 1980, as Reverbo intimates, it becomes kind of a depressing endeavor. Other notes coming in. Robert in Australia regarding Nibiru. Haven't you seen Nibiru, Bob? According to all the experts on YouTube. Yeah, a little cowbell for the dry Australian wit there. According to all the experts on YouTube, it's passed by Earth every second Tuesday since 2005. And when you can't see it, it's because it's hiding behind the sun. Peekaboo. Ron in Raleigh, collective punishment, you say? Ongoing collective punishment, Israel bombing the piss out of the Gaza Strip. Well, there's that. See, there are two countries for whom collective the rules against collective punishment don't apply, the United States and Israel. And meanwhile, courtesy of a little while back, courtesy of Steve in, formerly in China, Steve on the Gulf Coast, existential, you say, or momentum. Here's the thing that makes me sick. And just a note to the humorless people with the skinny ties who talk to their shoes. This is speculative speech. This is not an encouragement of any kind of conduct, okay? Here's the thing that makes me sick. I tell myself a bullet's a pretty good solution to a rotten president, since nothing in the Constitution makes any difference anymore, even in theory. Or since any rotten cop with all the TV cameras and voice recorders in the world pasted onto his rotten ass can announce he's going to kill someone and then go ahead for any reason or no reason and do it with impunity. Since one or the other judge is going to ignore all the evidence at hand and let the public servant and murderer go where? Go back to murdering, I suppose. Certainly not back to policing. I know this persistent feeling of mine regarding the asshole president, the raw sickness of it in my stomach, is related to the actions of the sick asshole cop and the other way around, one nauseating twist of the gut leading to and coming from the same insoluble state of life panic that constitutes both. I just don't know how or why this is so, and that makes me want to throw up again, which is terrible. On an empty stomach. Yeah, and that's when the dry heaves kick in, and those are no fun at all. And speaking of cops killing people, Jack in Shreveport, Nibiru, N-I-B-I-R-U, but from the marketing department as run by Jack in Shreveport, N-I-B-A-R-O-O. Nibiru sounds like some food product related to ramen. And you know, in some ways it may be. But speaking of cops killing people, there's the story coming out of Atlanta of Scout Schultz. Scout Schultz was a gender non-specific individual, a senior at Georgia Tech, which is a pretty fine engineering school. And a couple of nights ago, it was bruited all over the internet that police had been forced to kill Scout Schultz because Scout Schultz was carrying a knife and wouldn't put it down. And so Georgia Tech police blew Scout Schultz away. And it was right there on the internet for anybody to watch who wanted to, and it was pathetic and it was heartbreaking. Scout Schultz was the president of the Georgia Tech Pride Alliance. And had been a pretty effective president, according to what I've read. Scout Schultz's father said that Scout was had suffered some mental illness issues, but seemed to be doing better. Last night, however, Georgia Tech students were told to go to their rooms and lock their doors because there was political violence on campus, or there was violence on campus in regard to the shooting of Scout Schultz. The violence in question was that somebody burned a police car. Now, let's just try to get a little perspective on this. the police blow away a person who is no credible threat to them. No biggie. Somebody who's pissed off sets fire to a police car, and all the children get sent to their rooms and they're told to lock their door. I don't know what locking the door is going to do, what good that's going to do, because when the police decide to come through, they'll just knock it the hell down. And Scout Schultz was white. But the thing is, the thing that, that made Scout Schultz murderable, among other things, was the fact that Scout Schultz was of indeterminate gender. Scout Schultz preferred to be referred to by the pronoun they. Neither he nor she, they. And Scout Schultz is no more. And everything's been turned over to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. And so when questions are asked like, Jesus, there were four cops there. How come they didn't taser Scout Schultz? How come they didn't pepper spray Scout Schultz? You know, there doesn't seem to be a lack of pepper spray out there, generally speaking, among the police. And by the way, the knife, it was one of those little utility tools. Yeah, some cop was going to get killed by a three inch folding screwdriver. Great. I mean, not great, but you get the idea. So what Steve on the Gulf Coast talks about is not without precedent, because police do kill with impunity. And just as we've seen time after time after time after time, if it should happen that a police officer is charged, and that will not happen here, if a police officer is charged with murder or negligent manslaughter or involuntary manslaughter or anything at all, that police officer will be exonerated. Because ultimately, the police in this country can do no wrong. And that, of course, is one of those things that pretty clearly earmarks a fascist society. And so we find ourselves at the end of the program this Titanic Tuesday. Thanks to everybody who tunes in. Thank you in whatever way you participate, whenever you participate, whether you listen live or on the podcast. Thank you for sharing your precious finite time engaging in the conversation, in the program. Thank you very kindly to Silent R. Lamar for taking care of fundraising this evening so that I didn't even have to bother to mention it at all during the rest of the program. Thank you. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar. Much obliged and much, much appreciated indeed. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you also this evening to all-around great guy Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.